Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on current events in our economy right after this. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values. And that's because these two programs encompass the second and eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. Traditional American values are in individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. Now, these foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. And we covet our neighbor's property, and we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures, and those are called Federal Reserve Notes. We practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods, and we call those government. And we're not getting away with these crimes either. We're now paying up to 74% of everything that we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged homes that are owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars, but they're owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four in this country has an average $70,000 consumer debt. We now owe $15 trillion of national debt, and then we are surety for another $100 trillion of unfunded government obligations. Our financial institutions are leveraged out to about $1,000 trillion worldwide. Those are called derivatives. Our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. And you and I live from paycheck to paycheck, and then we're taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, you know, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way. In Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution, which says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, if you'd like to learn more about this tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and order our four-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, it's free, and you can call and order one now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Then click onto the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page and download it. It's free of charge. Hey, we've been talking about current events in our economy, and one of the topics that's brought to the fore here in the newsletter. I'm promoting a guy's newsletter here. His name is Bob Chapman. And he's an old man. Got white hair, I'm sure. He's probably the foremost newsletter writer in the United States. If he's not, he'd be second for sure. I can't think of anybody else that's greater or better informed or puts out a better, more timely, more comprehensive newsletter than the Chapman's International Forecaster. And so I recommend that to my students because once you leave school, I always tell my students, you know, on Friday, I say, all right, Monday morning, is the first day of the rest of your life. Now, what are you going to do with it? First of all, people come to school here because they're dissatisfied with the status quo in the economy. They're dissatisfied with the status quo in the judicial system or the political process. And people want answers. You know, they say, hey, what do I do? What do I do to solve this problem for myself? So the other day I said, well, let me show you how to do that. Have you ever had a complaint about a bank? Has the bank ever screwed you over one way or another? Okay, very simple solution. Stop doing business with the criminal entities called banks. I was doing some research the other day, and I discovered this, that the pharmaceutical industry, that's the big pharma, they call it. It's companies like Merck and Pfizer and so on, Searle. Well, these companies make drugs, and these drugs kill people. In fact, doctors working in conjunction with the drug companies under license from the government kill 130,000 people a year with their drug concoctions. Now, they've got lots of them. I don't know how many drug concoctions there are, but I'm going to guess they're in the thousands. And different companies have different concoctions that they get licensed or they get patented or copyrighted, whatever they're doing. I guess they patent them. And then they go out in the marketplace and they sell those. And then at some point in the future, they find out that this drug actually kills people, gives them heart attack. And so then they withdraw that drug from the market. Have you ever heard of that? Have you ever heard of any drug company being prosecuted for killing? You know, there was one drug killed 50,000 people. 50,000 people, that's quite a few people. That's as many people as live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Population 50,000. We just kill them all in 1 year. Well, we kill 130,000 people a year with these drugs. These drugs are used by doctors, and they either prescribe the wrong drug, too much of the right drug, or not enough of the right drug, and the patient dies. Isn't that special? All right. There's another group of people that die in this country, not as many, but quite a few, 90,000 people, from what's known as iatrogenic disease. Iatrogenic. And what that means is that you went to your licensed, bona fide, paid, and insured medical doctor, and he recommended that you have your appendix cut out. And that wasn't your problem at all. And so you went to the hospital, and you got your appendix cut out, and you got a staph infection, and you died from this secondary infection. Didn't die from the appendectomy. You died from the staph infection in the hospital. Or you went to the hospital with lung cancer, and it was in your right lung, but they took out your left lung. Made a mistake, just took out the wrong lung. Those are called iatrogenic, doctor-induced diseases. And that's just real special. All right? So that's 130,000 people die there, and then there's another 90,000. Do you think that the Food and Drug Administration doesn't know about these numbers, that I'm just telling you something that nobody's ever heard of? Did you think that iatrogenic disease is something that George Gordon just pulled out of thin air? All right, well, put that one aside. See, I'm not smart enough to figure that out, and I've never claimed to be. I'm just a reporter. I have to get those numbers somewhere, and those numbers come from the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, your government agency that has a secretary sitting in the president's council, you know, called the president's cabinet. It's a cabinet office. Well, the health department, the CDC, that's the Center for Disease Control, the Food and Drug Administration, the Department of Agriculture. Now, these agencies of government, they keep track of all this, and they report that. It isn't something that's being hidden. It's not a conspiracy to hide from you iatrogenic disease or drug deaths. President Clinton in 1998 personally made a report on the 130,000 that die from bad drugs or too much drug or not enough of the right drug and so on. And he said, we need to do better. Nothing's been done. It's still 130,000 a year. The government knows that there's a problem there, but the pharmaceutical companies make so much money selling these drugs that they're not about to change. And they just pass on campaign contributions to the congressman. For instance, Dick Armey, a wonderful guy that he is, he was a congressman from Texas. He snuck a little piece of legislation in on a rider to a bill that exempted the pharmaceutical companies from lawsuits from people like you and me because of a damage that's caused by a vaccine. So let's suppose, now you're listening to the news, right? And so the nice lady on the news, Joy Robertson, in our local area here, it's Joy, she gets on the TV and she says, be sure to go down and get your flu shot. And they got all these people going down getting their flu shots. Let's suppose that the flu shot killed you. And so, can you imagine how sick you'd be if you hadn't gotten your flu shot? So you're dead, and your husband or wife now wants to sue the pharmaceutical company. They can't do that. Let's suppose you get a note from your teacher, the health nurse at school, and they say, hey, we're going to have vaccinations next Wednesday. Your kid's got to be vaccinated. And so you let your kid get vaccinated, and the kid turns up with autism or something else, and the kid dies or ends up with epilepsy or something for the rest of his life. You cannot sue the drug companies, thanks to, God love him, Dick Armey, who got this bill passed. You are now barred from suing the drug company. There's a special government agency and a fund that's set up, and if you can qualify, you might get some compensation, maybe. The old common law rule of sue the wrongdoer, the tortfeasor, is out the window. Now, because of that, if you didn't know that, or if I'm just reporting something that you don't believe, I got that out of one of these newsletters. I don't know if it was Chapman's newsletter or somebody else's, but that's where I get most of my information. And there's a lot of these news sources online, you know, like Rince is one, R-E-N-C-E, I believe it is, or R-E-N-S-E. And you know, all these little pieces of news that come out that there just isn't time to report all of this on CNN. I mean, even if they could or would, they don't report that. And so these newsletters, they come along, and they fill in that gap. Well, here in the International Forecaster, there's a section in here on health. And then there's a lady by the name of Wendy Wilson, and she puts in a little section in here, see if I can find it. And she talks about health stories in here every week. Here it is. It's called Health Herbalist Wendy Wilson. She starts off, what's for dinner? In the 1960s, there was Woodstock, the Cold War, and families planned their dinner meals a week at a time. Planning was part of preparing healthy meals and sticking to a budget and avoiding weight gain and staying out of debt. Few seem to plan their meals ahead anymore unless it's a holiday meal, and this leads to spontaneous food choices based more on time available and cravings than health considerations. Being good stewards of time will help us live healthier lives. Modern conveniences have freed us up to be able to do more in less time. However, how are we applying the extra time to better our health? So what's in your food? Well, people for the most part seem to be trying to make healthier choices at the grocery store. This is forcing product manufacturers to produce products, or at the very least advertising, claiming that they're making healthier products. And it says health inside this package. An example is the frozen entree meals, Healthy Choices. Now, I personally wouldn't eat one, but the name sends a message to the consumer. The Food and Marketing Institute completed a study on consumers titled Shopping for Health 2011. And there seems to be a shift in what consumers are interested in and what they're concerned about with regards to their foods. Shoppers used to be sensitive to some of the undesirable ingredients in foods such as fat, sugar, salt, and calories. Today, however, shoppers seem to be looking for fortified foods. Fiber, 44%. Whole grain, 36%. Protein, 27%. Omega-3 fatty acids, 23%. And antioxidants, 16%. Food growing, harvesting, storage, preparation, and the manufacturing process has radically changed the and more consumers want to know what's in their food. Many consumers don't stop there, and they've taken a serious interest to better understand what ingredients and what these terms really mean. I'm going to pause there, and let's think about what Wendy Wilson here is telling us. You, if you're like I am, are at least a little bit concerned about what we're putting into our face. For instance, if I see on a package that it contains pork, being a Hebrew, I say, well, I don't want to eat that. So I'm not opposed to people that eat pork, and I've eaten my share of pork. So don't think, you know, that I'm out of touch with reality here. My grandmother, I don't believe, ever cooked a meal without pig. And if she did, it's because she ran out. She even used lard in her pie crusts. She had a ham bone in the beans, or a bacon rind or something to flavor the beans. I'm pretty familiar with that. But over the years, as a matter of health, I took a look at this fat, pork, salt, additives that go into your lunch meats like sodium nitrite and sodium nitrate and sodium benzonite. And I came to the conclusion, based upon reading the Reader's Digest and U.S. News and World Report and some health papers, you know, that I got on the Internet and one thing and another, I said, you know, maybe those things aren't as good for me as I thought they were. I used to smoke Camel cigarettes because they were good for my T-zone. They used to promote cigarette smoking as being good for your health, if you can believe that. And I believed it, and I smoked for 9 years. But then one day I woke up and I said, you know, based upon the Surgeon General's report and based upon what I'm seeing here from the American Cancer Society and so on, maybe smoking isn't so good for me. And so I quit smoking and quit eating pig and quit eating shellfish. And now I avoid lunch meats and I don't drink Coca-Cola anymore and so on down the line. And maybe I'm a little better off for it, and maybe not. It depends upon your view in life. But what I wanted to point out here is that there's a section on health. Every issue of the International Forecaster, and it's a different story each and every time. In fact, I'm in the process of compiling all of these, and I think I have about 200 of them now, 200 forecasters with the health section by Wendy Wilson that I've cut out, and I intend to put it in a book form. I want to do that for my students. And she has cures in here. Now, these are called alternative medicines. Alternative medicine. And that's very politically incorrect. So if you're looking for political correctness, you don't want this. But for those of you that are iconoclasts and you're looking for something, you know, to, you know, stick your thumb in the government's eye, this is the section you want. I'm on page 22 here. This is Wendy Wilson's. It's health herbalist Wendy Wilson, when she's asking what's for dinner. And this story here is driven by what people want or what they think they want, what they believe. Now, she said there is a product out there called Healthy Choices. She said, I personally wouldn't eat one of those. It's kind of like a McDonald's Big Mac. I mean, they really taste good, and they look wonderful. I personally wouldn't eat one. And I saw the movie, there's a good one out here called Super Size Me. If you ever get a chance to see that video called Super Size Me, look it up on the internet. And I don't care what it costs, $100, it's worth $100 to watch and to see what a guy did. He lived on nothing but McDonald's for 30 days. And he had three doctors keeping track of his pulse rate and his heart rate and his cholesterol and his body weight and body fat and the whole nine yards. And in fact, on about the 25th day, his cardiologist said, you have to stop or it's going to kill you. That's how good McDonald's is. Now, the reason that I'm bringing this to your attention, I bring this to the attention of my students and people who call the law school, and oftentimes people call here and they say, I heard your program on aspartame. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your vote of confidence. But when I make a report on aspartame, it isn't because George Gordon ever went to college and studied aspartame or some kind of a health product, and I'm coming to you and reporting on it. What I'm doing is I am a reporter, and I am simply reporting to you what somebody who is in the know has reported and published, and I'm bringing that to your attention. So people call and they say, well, I've got cancer, or my dad has cancer, and we need a cancer cure. And I did a series of programs one time, 14 cancer cures. Did you know that there are 14 cures out there for cancer? Cures. I'm not talking about treatments now, cures. Now, I didn't write that, and I didn't make it that way. I'm just here to tell you that cancer is a $500 billion a year industry in the United States. It is so profitable that we don't want a cure for cancer. President Nixon came up with this cancer cure thing back in 1972 and took taxpayer money to buy and pay for it. And from 1972 until today, there's still no cure for cancer. There isn't, hasn't, and won't be because it's too valuable. My God, if you had a cure for cancer, the economy would collapse. You can't take $500 billion out of the healthcare industry. Why the thing would go belly up. So in the interest of the national economy, we have to have cancer. It's like crime. We have to have crime. Millions of people in America depend upon crime for their livelihoods. Don't you understand? Millions of people in this country depend upon their paycheck every week upon cancer. We have to have cancer. It's necessary for the economy. Now, I'm not sitting here telling you that cancer is good or that crime is good. I'm just here to tell you that, you know, you take national defense. You have to have national defense. You have to have public education. If you were to abolish public education in the morning, the economy would collapse. Now, maybe it would be good if the economy collapsed and we started all over. The economy is going to collapse anyway. Just the rule of 72 guarantees it. I pointed that out in the last program when I said, you know, interest in usury has an outcome. The creator of the universe, God Almighty, said, don't do that, and so we went ahead and did it. All right, now we're going to get an outcome. It's like smoking cigarettes. You know, somebody said to you, don't smoke, and you've been smoking for 40 years. Now the doctor says you got lung cancer. That's the outcome. Don't sit there and bitch about, why me? You wouldn't have it any other way. You wanted to smoke. You know, people are real concerned about health. They want a body that looks like Charles Atlas. And they want to achieve it on Oreo cookies. You can't have a body like Charles Atlas on Oreo cookies. That doesn't exist. Not in the real world. I'm not suggesting to you that broccoli is better than Oreo cookies. If you were to ask me, I'd tell you plainly that Oreos are much better than broccoli. but you're going to get an outcome. There's a conclusion to all of this. And what we're facing today in our economy is the conclusion for years and years of bad practice. Now, this is called the International Forecaster, and this forecaster has in it a section on health twice a week, every issue. Once in a while, they'll miss, but very, very rare. And you're going to learn something every single week. I do. I mean, unless you're an herbalist, I mean, you could be a Richard Schultz. And if, Richard, you're listening, maybe you don't need to listen to Wendy Wilson because you already know all of these health examples and all of this health information. But for lay people, you know, Joe Sixpack, when the economy collapses, and I say when, not if, you know, just when it collapses, you're going to have a hard time getting medical services and medical care. In fact, it's already a little difficult for some of us. Now, I don't have a Social Security number. I don't have a driver's license issued by any state institution here. And what else didn't I have? Oh, I don't have a birth date. Can you believe that? Here's a man talking to you on the radio. I don't have a birth date. I don't have a Social Security number. I don't have a health card. I don't have a driver's license. I don't have any state-issued ID. Well, I had a medical problem come up the other day. And I said, well, I guess I'll go down to the hospital and see what they've got to say. So my wife called, made an appointment down at Baxter Regional Medical Center. And we went down and got in line, did my thing. And a nice young lady, she called me up. It was my turn. She said, here, Mr. Gordon, would you fill this out for me? And so I went over and I sat down, 5 pages long, 5 pages. And I filled it out, all 5 pages. And it asked me the question, what's your name? And I put my name in there, George Gordon. So I answered that one correctly. And it said, what's your Social Security number? And I put N-O-N-E in that line. None. I don't have one. It said, what's your birthday? And I put none, N-O-N-E. I don't have one. I don't practice birthdays. And then I went through and I answered all the questions over there. And when I passed it in, she called me back up and she says, oh, Mr. Gordon, no, we can't treat you here without a birth date and a Social Security number. And I said, well, I didn't come down here for a birthday party. And I'm not asking you people down here to send me a Social Security check, and I pay cash. I mean, I'll give you gold, silver. I'll give you Federal Reserve notes, or I'll give you Mexican pesos, whatever payment you want. I can pay you in meat, milk, butter, eggs, labor. And this poor woman looked at me like I was Mork from Ork, and so she sent me on to another nice young lady who went and talked to their legal department, and they came back, and they came to the conclusion that they could not treat me at that facility. Isn't that special? All right. Now, that's just the tip of the iceberg, and this is in good times. I mean, hell, we're not sitting here in 1935 depressed America, you know. We're still sitting here in relatively good times. Things are still functioning. You know, the electricity, the electric grid's still on. The water's still running out of the faucets. And gas is still being pumped down here at the gas station. Everything seems to be pretty good. But I'm pointing out to you that there's coming a time here. And maybe not for you. Maybe you'll have your Obama health care card. But I'm not going to have an Obama health care card. And I may have a medical problem come up, and I may need services, and I need to solve that problem. So I went over to another health care clinic, and I solved the problem, and I got the medical services that I needed. But what if I couldn't get those medical services? Then what am I going to do? See where we're going with this? I mean, if you have a heart attack, you know, you need to, or a broken leg, you get shot, or you have a car wreck or something like that. Maybe you need a transfusion. Maybe you need some ER care. I'm not opposed to hospitals and doctors, you know, carte blanche. I'm just pointing out to you that what if for some reason you can't get that? In the International Forecaster, this column, this section in here that deals with health, deals with the real life practical application of food as medicine. And vitamins and minerals, and what do you do when you have a health problem and you need to solve it, like diabetes. You know, what do you do when you have diabetes? The doctor says, oh, we're going to have to put you on insulin. Well, I don't want insulin, and I don't want diabetes, so I need to solve that diabetes problem, and diabetes is curable. Cancer is curable. Heart disease is curable. These diseases that are called incurable by the medical establishment is a sales program. It's the way we sell the product. I mean, if we had a cure for cancer, well, we would opt for that rather than treatment. It's like cholesterol. You know, you plug up your arteries. Did you know there's a way to unplug your arteries? It's called chelation therapy. It was discovered by the AMA, of all people. It's the American Medical Association that discovered the process, and then they abandoned it. Why? Well, because bypass surgery pays $100,000 and chelation pays $1,000. So if you're a doctor, would you rather sell a $100,000 bypass surgery operation or a $1,000 chelation therapy? Huh? I mean, come on. We're talking about the economy here. We're just talking about money. We're just talking about common sense. So the medical establishment abandoned chelation therapy in favor of bypass surgery, which makes all the sense in the world for every cardiovascular surgeon in the world. That makes all the sense in the world for you boys. I wouldn't deny that. But for you and me, after we go through this bypass surgery, we become invalids for the rest of our lives. Invalids on medication for the rest of your life on bypass surgery. And your lifespan is going to be cut down by quite a bit, and your mobility is going to be cut down quite a bit. If you could avoid bypass surgery, and if you could save $99,000 in the process, doesn't it seem like to you that that might be something worth looking into? Not necessarily something that you might want to do, but would it be worth looking into? I would say that for $160 a year, 100 issues with this column called Health Herbalist Wendy Wilson will more than pay for that $100,000 bypass surgery. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, that introductory CD package is on our website, downloadable in 2 or 3 forms. Go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download it. Don't ask me how, I don't know. Once in a while, somebody calls here to law school and says, hey, I don't know how to download it. Don't ask me, I don't know how to do it either. But if you're a computer geek, you're supposed to know how. People that use computers should know how to download that. But if you don't, go ahead and call the law school. I'll put Dirk on the phone, and he'll explain it to you. That comes in once in a while. But if you're on top of it, you should be able to go to the archives page and download that free general law CD right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, they're accurate, and they're correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. And that's what we're doing here with the International Forecaster. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind now that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, or the sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network, or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, let me circle that one off, this health letters. Health. This was Wendy Wilson. I wanted to write that one off here. Yeah, let me turn over here to page 14. Page 14. There's a report that comes out every week here in the International Forecaster, and it's called Gold, Silver, and Commodities. Let me flip back here and see if I'm right. Yeah, Gold, Silver, Platinum, and Palladium. And sometimes people, when they read this section of the Forecaster, they report to me that it's way beyond them. Unable to compute. Well, I'm not sure that you will be unable to compute this. Let me read to you a couple of three stories here, or little paragraphs. Early Friday. Now remember, this comes out on Saturday. He reports now, early Friday, both gold and silver did very well. Spot gold closed up $14.50 to $1,681.60 as December rose $1,390 to $1,682.40. Period. Well, that's fairly simple and easy to comprehend. The price of gold during the week, or at least between Thursday and Friday, rose $14.50 in one day. And the spot price of gold closed at $1,681.60 an ounce. So if you had a Kruger end, it was worth $1,681.60. Now, I'm asked quite often what I think of gold and silver, and I think they're very valuable. And I recommend to my students that they buy all the gold and silver that they can afford to buy. Realizing, of course, that you have to pay your rent every month. You have to buy your food and pay for the gasoline and, you know, pay your life insurance premiums and all these bills and expenses that you have in life. And then some of us have what is called disposable income. And some people spend their disposable income on Disney cruises, or maybe Carnival cruise, or maybe they spend it on baseball tickets to the World Series, or you know. And if that's your thing in life, well, go ahead and spend your money the way you think it ought to be spent. Now, there's some of the rest of us over here that are concerned enough about international geopolitics that we want to have something set aside. So instead of a 401k, we want to have gold and silver. Rather than having a bank account, we would rather have palladium or platinum or copper or something of tangible value. I always recommend to my students a 4-year supply of food, that's minimum, and that they have ready access to liquidity. Liquidity, that means money, you know, right now money, you know. Because when the economy collapses, the banks will all close for a period of time like they did in 1933. Roosevelt closed the banks. And during this period of time, when the banks are closed, you won't be able to cash your checks or buy, sell, and trade or do business. And this could go on for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, 6 weeks maybe. Depends on how bad it is and what's coming down and so on. And so liquidity is kind of important. Do you have what you need to trade to other people to get the things that you want and need? And throughout history, or at least over the last 4,000 or 5,000 years, gold and silver have filled that bill. And they are filling that bill right now today. And so those of us that have a little bit of gold and silver, you know, you want to keep abreast of, well, what's it worth today? And so the International Forecaster gives you an update twice a week. Now, you can get an update by getting on the telephone and calling your broker. He'll know every day and, in fact, hour by hour. I mean, I can call my broker in Burlingame, California, and I can say, hey, what's the spot price of gold or silver? And they can tell me as of right then, right at that moment in time, what the price is. And that's called the intraday price. And I don't think that we need to know the up-to-the-minute intraday price unless we're going to make a contract right at that moment in time, you know. Most of us have an ounce or two to sell, you know. Maybe if you're real fortunate, you might even have a bag of silver to sell or something like that or buy. But most of us, you know, have a little bit of this and that, you know, enough to carry us over, you know, for a month or two or three or something like that. And the forecaster here keeps you right up to the minute. And it's pretty straightforward. Let me give you a little bit more here. Spot silver rose 51 cents to $34.14 an ounce, as December rose 54 cents to $32.21 an ounce. Fundamentally, it was a very good day for the metals. Both would have closed higher, but the cartel was relentless. Gold open interest fell 3,958 to 436,578 contracts, as silver open interest rose 1,152 contracts to 101,327. Now, these contracts that are being bought, sold, and traded on the commodities exchanges and their relationship to the prices are important for all of us. Never reported on CNN or on the nightly business report, but they're very important. And the reason for that is that as an analyst looks at this, when he sees contracts increase, he says, oh, there's more buying going on. When he sees the contracts decreasing, he says, oh, people are selling. Prices are going down. And so, you know, guys like you and me, we're not going to be in the market buying and selling every day. But I like to know, well, how much is my little hoard worth? You know, my 6 ounces is worth $1,681.60. And it was up to 1900 and some change. And then it dropped down to 1580, and now it's up to 1680, so it's up 100 from its low. But it's still down a couple of $100 from its high. So I look at that, and I like to worry about it, and I like to think about it. By the end of the year, we should see $2,000 gold and $50 silver. And I want to point out, for those of you that call and you want to know what I recommend gold and silver, because over the last 10 years, gold and silver have increased in value from $4.50 for silver in 2000 to $32 today. Silver, last October in 2010 to right now today, is up 30%. Now, how much has your house appreciated from last October until this October? How much more is your house worth than it was last year at this time? Your stocks and your 401ks, how much have they appreciated in the last year? Now, gold is up 20% over last year. How much is your house, your stocks, your bonds, your investments? How much have they increased? And this has been the story with gold and silver over the last 10 years. Stocks, if they go up 5% a year, people would call you a genius if you had a stock that increased in value by 5%. And gold and silver have gone up 20% every year for the last 10 years. You know, say for a couple of years. I remember silver actually went down one year, about 2007 or 8. It went down 2 or 3%. Last year, silver went up 86%. That's right. Silver was up 86% year on year last year in 2010. That was the best year. Some years it only went up 5, 6, 7%. But so far this year, in spite of the volatility in the market, it's still up 30%. And gold and silver has not reached a bubble stage yet. Bubble stage. And the reason that we know that is that the government is still deficit spending by $1 trillion a year. And as long as that goes on, there will be inflation. And as long as there's inflation, we're going to have higher and higher gold and silver prices. $1,600 is not the top. $3,200 isn't the top. $6,400 isn't the top, and so on. When the government balances its budget, the price of gold and silver will stabilize and then retreat. But until then, it's going to continue to go up. So that's what we find in the forecaster, the money changer, the privateer, the McIlvany report, and so on. They don't report that on the nightly business news. Why is that? They're not selling gold on the nightly business report. They're selling stocks. And as long as the sources of information that you rely upon for news and information has an agenda, they're selling stocks, they're selling vaccines, they're selling drugs, they're selling, well, of course, that's what they're promoting, that's what they're pushing, just like right now. What am I selling? I'm selling the International Forecaster. I'm not selling the USA Today. I'm not selling the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. I'm selling the International Forecaster. And I'm telling you all of the various parts of it that are valuable to you as a plumber, a carpenter, an electrician, a wage earner, a bag lady under a bridge. These pieces of information have outcomes. There's a reason for this. Now you may say, well, I don't have any gold or silver. Well, you don't need that part of the forecaster then. It's irrelevant to you. You may say, well, I'm a drug addict and I'm on drugs and on Medicare. Well, you might not need Wendy Wilson's health column. You know, I'm not here to tell you that you should get off of Rexall and Walgreens. I mean, if you're happy and satisfied with your doctor and the drug regimen that you're on, you probably ought to just stay right there. It's for those of you who are unhappy with Rexall and the drug regimen. One of the complaints that I have over food, now that we're back on this food thing, when I go into a store, I like to know what it is I'm buying. And so when I pick up a can of pork and beans, it's got the ingredients on there, and it tells me what's on there, and I can look at it and put it back. I can't do that with this, with these genetically modified organisms, because the Congress says there's no difference between corn and corn and corn and corn and corn. And so they came out with this pronouncement. Here comes my senator and my representative voting for Monsanto's GMO. And I'm not opposed to people who want to eat GMO food. You know, if that's what you want to eat, you know, get after it. But I don't want to eat the GMO food. And I think I'm just as entitled to make my own choice and decision in eating GMO food as you are to make your choice to eat GMO food. Now, my government has said, no, nope, you don't have that choice. So we're not going to require that the manufacturer list on his package GMO food. And so some enterprising guy said, no GMOs in our food. And the FDA came down on them, or the Department of Agriculture said, no, you cannot put that on your label. And that's because if the people of America had a choice between GMO and non-GMO, everybody knows that they would choose non-GMO, or at least a sizable bunch of people would. And that's bad for business. And so we're not going to put that on there. So we go to Congress and we get a law passed. It's not the will of the people that we're concerned about. It's the will of Monsanto that we're concerned about. And God love Monsanto. I'm not opposed to Monsanto selling their GMOs. I mean, if that's what the people of America want to buy, they should have a choice. And that's my point. They should have a choice. And Monsanto says, no, they should not have a choice. They should eat what we put in the package and shut the hell up. And I disagree with that position, Monsanto. I think that all of us should be able to choose whether we want to eat your product or somebody else's. You're the ones that are saying, no, you can't have a choice. So I'm in favor of having a choice, and so is the international forecaster and Wendy Wilson. And that choice then becomes available to us when we know what's in the food. And we know what's in the food because somebody blows the whistle on Monsanto and says, hey, 80% of the corn in this country is GMO. Okay, well, I got that one loud and clear. So here's the way I handle the GMO problem. I'm sitting in the restaurant and the lady says, you want string beans or corn? And I say, well, 80% of the corn in this country is, in fact, GMO. So I'll eat the string beans because they haven't GMO'd the string beans yet. See how simple that is? Now, 96% of the sweet corn is non-GMO, and that's what you're eating when you eat in the restaurant. But 4% of it is GMO, and I don't want to eat GMO, so until you can guarantee me that it's non-GMO, I'm not going to eat corn in the restaurant. So the other day I went down to the Tim and Jim store and I was looking around and I saw some organic sweet corn. And I bought all that they had. All that was there. Took it all. Brought it home, put it on the shelf. Because if it's organic, then it's non-GMO. See how simple that is? So you're looking for something, you know, as a consumer, you know, if you get to the point where you can make those kinds of decisions and choices, then when I want to buy a product and I see that it has cottonseed oil in the product, for instance, I was looking at some a salad dressing the other day and I saw cottonseed oil and I put it back on the shelf. And that's because nearly all of the cotton in America is GMO. So the cottonseed oil is GMO. And they're using GMO cottonseed in the salad dressing. So I went over and I found another one. Oh, look at this one. This one's using soybean oil. Yeah, about 90% of the soybeans in the country are also GMO. So I put that one back. And I picked up another one. Oh, look at this one's canola oil. And I said, oh my God, canola oil. So I said, well, about 80% of the canola is also GMO, so I put that one back. So when I see corn oil, cottonseed oil, canola oil, or soybean oil in a product, I don't buy the product. See how simple that is? I mean, you don't have to be real smart. You don't have to be an herbalist. You don't have to be a doctor. I just kept looking around a little bit. Oh, look at this one here. This one's got olive oil in it. Oh, okay. So I bought the one with olive oil. Now, once in a while, you'll find a manufacturer someplace, and he'll put on there that there's no GMOs in here. Depends on what country it comes from. They can put that on there. Not here in the United States. If you put non-GMO here, I think you'll get yourself into trouble. But if your product is coming from Argentina, you can put that on there. If it's coming from Italy or Spain or someplace, you can put that on there. And so we're pretty careful about what we buy and what we eat, and we don't have very many medical problems. And we, you know, I was over at this health clinic, you know, I said the other day I had this health problem, and so I went over to the doctor. And then sometimes people are shocked. What? You went to a doctor? Yeah, yeah. And on the questionnaire it said, well, who is your family physician? I put down none. And the girl was just shocked. Everybody has a family doctor. And she questioned me closely, and she said, well, wait a minute, everybody has a family doctor. And I said, I didn't know that. And she said, oh, yes, it's, everybody has a family doctor. I said, well, I don't have one. I guess I should get one. Are they in the Yellow Pages? I'd hate to be without one if I'm supposed to have one. Is there a law that requires that I have a family doctor? And she said, well, no. I said, thank God, because I haven't had a family doctor in at least 20 or 30 years. And she said, well, when was the last time you saw a doctor? And I thought about it for a minute. I said, 1990. Last time I went to a doctor was 1990. And here it is, 2011. And that's 21 years. I haven't seen a doctor in 21 years. And if I don't see a doctor for the next 21 years, it'll be just a little bit too soon. I don't go to medical doctors because they're a part and parcel with my health practice. But again, you know, you may have something come up and you might need one once in a while. And I'm not opposed to going to the medical doctor when you need one, especially when you get shot in the chest with a gun like Ronald Reagan did. You know, they need to take him to the hospital and fix him. But other than that, boys and girls, if you could stay away from the medical doctor, it not only would put a lot more money in your pocket, a lot more than the $160 that it costs you to buy the International Forecaster. $160 is what this costs. Remember, this is the internationalforecaster.com, all one word. And if you want to send an email, you send it to bob@intforecaster.com. That's all one word. If you want information, you write info, info@intforecaster.com. And you can probably find them on Google. I'm sure that they'll be there somewhere or on the internet. Internationalforecaster.com. These are just some of the services, some of the columns that are in here. Gold and silver this week, and you've got Wendy Wilson's herb story in there. You've got U.S. markets are in there. In other words, it's broken up into various sections. For those of you that want to invest in stocks and bonds, he's got a column in here on stocks and bonds, and it's very short and to the point. Don't buy them. So if you were wondering, should I buy stocks and bonds? This guy is an old-timey stockbroker, and he said, no. Should I have stocks and bonds in my 401k? His answer is short and to the point. No. So when you call here and you ask me, what do you think? I tell people, no. No. Gold and silver is what we recommend, and that's what Bob Chapman recommends. Hey, I'm about out of time here again. That'll cover pretty much what I wanted to tell you in this segment. Let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Hey, there's the signal. It says my time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.